Future Design Podcast is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Please visit my website at fdpod.co. That's fdpod.co, and sign up for my free newsletter that includes the monthly review of the latest 4 episodes, takeaways, books and articles I've read to prepare for the show. Also, if you're listening to the show on Apple Podcast, please give a rating and a review so that more people can know about this show. Now that I got that out of the way, please enjoy this week's show. Future Design Podcast. Is artificial general intelligence a pipe dream, or is it becoming a reality? It surely is, but not in a sci-fi way that we think it's going to be. Hi, this is Takatoshi Shibayama, the host of the Future Design Podcast. In this episode, I have Peter Voss, CEO of iGo, the gentleman behind creating the chatbot with a brain. After exiting a successful software business through an IPO, he embarked into the world of AI. He talks to us about how we perceive as general AI is different from what is actually being created. It's not an AI with a soul, but with a brain that can make rational decisions that can augment and improve human society. Well, thank you very much, Peter, for being on our show. It really means it's a very interesting topic for us to pick up artificial general intelligence, because we had AI before in one of our episodes, and you know, our guest talked about mostly about business AI, but I think I really wanted to get into a bit more on general AI, because this is something that is fascinated people's minds for many years, decades. And you're the perfect person to talk about it, because I heard that you coined the term artificial general intelligence. So could you take us through your history of being involved in AI and what that means to you?
Yes, certainly. Well, thanks for having me on the show. I'll give you a little bit of a context, the background of how I got to working on AI. I actually started off as an electronics engineer, then started my own electronics company. Then I fell in love with software, and basically my company turned into a software company. And we actually became quite successful with an ERP system that I developed. The company did an IPO, so that was super exciting. But that also gave me the freedom to then do some fundamental research when I, you know, left the company. And I actually took off 5 years to study intelligence, to really deeply understand what intelligence is, because working with software, it really struck me that how dumb software is. You know, software doesn't have any common sense. And if the programmer didn't think of something, you'll just get an error message, or it'll do something really silly. So it'll crash. So I really wanted to understand how we can make software more intelligent, how we can give it common sense. So I took 5 years to study intelligence, and from many different aspects, starting with philosophy, even, you know, what is reality, epistemology, theory of knowledge, how do we know anything, how can we be certain, and also what intelligence and cognitive psychology, when IQ tests, what do they measure, you know, are they meaningful, how do children learn, how does our intelligence differ from animal intelligence, all of these questions to really deeply understand cognition, intelligence. And of course, I studied AI itself as well, to see what people had done over the decades in the field of AI. So over that period of 5 years, I came up with some ideas with a design for a cognitive engine or a thinking machine. And at that time, this was around 2001, I got together with some other people who had similar ideas, and looking around us to see what were people actually doing in the field of AI, it was all narrow AI. And I'll go back to a little bit of the history of artificial intelligence. When the term AI was coined more than 60 years ago, the original founders thought that they could build thinking machines within a few years, you know, that could think and reason the way humans do. And of course, it turned out to be much, much, much harder. So over the decades, what happened, rather than trying to solve sort of intelligence in general terms, people started solving particular problems and calling that AI, you know, like IBM's chess playing computer that became the world chess champion. And, you know, many things like container optimization and some pattern recognition and things like that. So AI really over the decades has been narrow AI. And I'll talk a little bit more about that if we want to get a bit more technical. But anyway, in 2001, I got together with some other people who said, I think the time is ripe. Hardware and software have developed enough that we should go back to the original dream of AI to build thinking machines that can think and reason and learn more the way humans do. And so we actually wrote a book called Artificial General Intelligence. Three of us came up with a term. And then since then, I've basically had several companies, first an R&D company, and now I'm on my second commercial company to commercialize artificial general intelligence.
A lot of your articles mentioned about the history of AI. First, it was the good old-fashioned AI, as you call it, where much of it is around very specific things. More, you mentioned about chess players or Go, mm-hmm. or maybe Go is a little bit more difficult, but certainly around the computer games type of AIs. And then you moved on to, or we have moved on to deep learning, where mm-hmm. it's very business specific, and then has this learning mm-hmm. methodology of taking certain data and analyzing mm-hmm. it, which I kind of think AI is a little bit misleading because it's not really artificial, or it is artificial, but it's not really intelligence. It's more like data analysis, mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
And now you're moving on to a very, very different type of AI, which has this cognitive abilities and also the
correct
consciousness, I guess, in some way. Mm-hmm. So could you take us through a little bit about the history there so people can understand a little bit more about, these three waves of AI?
Yeah. And in fact, DARPA here coined the term the three waves of artificial intelligence, the three waves of AI, or the third, three waves. And so the first wave exactly is the first few decades. It was sort of the expert systems, logic trees, things really mainly focused on formal logic, some mathematical approaches to AI. And this is where the chess playing champion Deep Blue was designed with that. And about 7 or 8 years ago, there was a real breakthrough in a different approach called neural networks or, statistical systems. And that, has really dominated the world now for the last, 7 or 8 years, because large companies had accumulated massive amounts of data and massive amounts of computing power, like, obviously Google and Facebook and Amazon. So they figured out some algorithms that they could use to build very, very powerful classifiers or categorizers, so that you could give it a pattern that could say it fits in this category. And, this has been very good for speech recognition, to categorize what word you're actually hearing, for image recognition, which is used in autonomous vehicles. And most importantly, of course, where the big dollars are in advertising, targeted advertising. They can do the data mining, build a predictive model that can say, this person will probably respond to that kind of ad. So the second wave of AI has been tremendously successful. But as you say, it's not really intelligence. In fact, I could just mention that both the first wave and the second wave of AI, the intelligence that you see in the behavior is really the intelligence of the programmer or the data scientist. So it was basically in the first wave, the programmer who figured out how can we write code that can beat the world chess champion. And, and then the number crunching of the machine allowed us to do, millions of calculations very quickly and to actually beat the chess champion. Now, in the second wave, it's not so much programming, but more data scientists that figure out how do we need to format the data? How do we need to collect it, tag it? And then how do we train the model? So they're building models that are predictive, but it's still the external intelligence really that is doing the trick. Once you build the model, it's static. It doesn't learn, it doesn't reason, it doesn't do anything. So getting back to the three waves of AI that DARPA talked about. So we've talked about the first and second wave. Now the third wave is really getting closer to what human intelligence is. It's this fluid intelligence that can learn immediately, every sentence you hear, every image you see, can fundamentally change your worldview, your understanding of something, set the context, you reason about things. So you have reasoning, you have immediate learning, you have deep understanding. And so that third wave is really implemented through a cognitive architecture. So your computer system is inherently designed to have all of the components that intelligence requires, so that the intelligence is in the machine more than it is, you know, external. Now, of course, we have to use our intelligence to build these machines in the first place, and that's very hard. But that's basically what the third wave of AI is, and that is no longer narrow AI. Then it's that's moving very much in the direction of artificial general intelligence.
I knew back in the days, I guess in the 1950s and 60s, there were two camps of people who were working on artificial intelligence. And one camp was, you know, trying to augment humans so that they can do businesses better or, you know,
right,
or enhance human capabilities. And the other camp was trying to actually create human artificially. And I've seen that, you know, the first camp has been very successful at doing what they're doing, maybe because of the computational powers that it has given them, especially in the last decade or so, because, you know, obviously silicon transistors are getting smaller and smaller and, right, and getting faster and faster. So they can do these narrow tasks very, very well. Mm-hmm. But in the second camp, where they're trying to make real artificial humans, human minds, I guess, right, you know, we're still really not there yet in terms of computational powers. And maybe that's why it has kind of lagged behind the narrow intelligence. Where do you see the you know, computational powers really fit in with the general AI? Because right now, you know, we hear a lot, maybe it's a heavily hyped, but we hear about quantum computing as well, making an impact potentially on general intelligence. What do you think?
Yeah, so my own view is that I don't think the bottleneck for getting more intelligent machines and to get closer to human level general intelligence, I don't think that the compute power is that much of a bottleneck. I think the much bigger bottleneck is coming up with the right algorithms. So I think we probably have enough computing power right now in, you know, in the machines that we have or that we can build. So I don't think we need quantum computers to achieve it. And quantum computers are still, the jury's still out as to what kinds of problems quantum computers can actually solve and how well they can scale. Nobody knows for sure what quantum computers do, but I don't think quantum computers are needed for it. And also, it doesn't look like quantum computers will actually be general purpose machines, that they will be more like coming up with a solution to give it a problem and it then settles on a solution and spits it out. But I don't think, it's still kind of early days, and I don't think it really features in the roadmap that, as I see it, for sort of human level intelligence. Now, you also spoke about, whether computers are enhancing our capabilities or are replacing humans. And of course, we're seeing both already. I mean, you know, we've had automated tellers that have, you know, replaced many of the functions of tellers. But again, they are very narrow. You know, so where they are replacing human labor, it's really automation, you know, whether it's some kind of a welding robot or whether it's some more cognitive thing, like word process, spell correction, or calculating spreadsheets and, you know, calculators and whatever. So, you know, those are narrow applications where they, in some cases, they are replacing human labor, but they're certainly not replacing humans and, you know, an overall capability, especially when you're talking about sense acuity and dexterity. I mean, if you think about, for example, somebody working on a construction site, doing all sorts of different tasks, we're long, long way away from having, you know, robots that could have that kind of sense acuity and dexterity and the intelligence to do the right things, you know.
And you talked about the four C's that are defining factors in creating general intelligence. Could you talk us through a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, so I mean that's one way of looking at it is that you basically have the competence that you have of cognitive measures, you know, that you basically have the right level of IQ, and that these are core capabilities that you have that can be reused for different applications. This is kind of where the general intelligence comes in, because when you have, as you have different applications in, for commercial applications, you don't want to have to train and teach the system separately for each task. You want, that core competency. Then you want to be able to customize it to each individual, so that each individual is personalized, and that's really part of the ability to learn, to learn interactively. So I think those are the kind of the key things, that I think are attributes of an intelligent system. And my focus is on chatbots. Where my company currently is focusing on a chatbot with a brain, basically an intelligent chatbot that really can remember and have deeper understanding and can reason. So you can have a much more intelligent conversation with it. And for that, it's just really important that it can remember what you said, 5 minutes ago or 2 days ago or a year ago. So it must have memory, and it must be able to learn immediately, interactively. When you say something, must immediately understand that and learn it, and to be able to use that in the conversation. And it must be able to reason. So, memory, learning, deep understanding, and reasoning. And the current chatbots that are out there don't have those capabilities. They're basically dumb. So, I mean, you would never hire an assistant that didn't remember what you said 2 minutes ago, or that couldn't learn anything new. So that's really kind of the requirements that we have. But it's very, very hard to get to human level understanding, and especially the common sense knowledge that we acquire by growing up in the real world. That's quite a challenge for us to be able to teach an AI, all of that background knowledge. So that'll take quite a bit of effort.
Yeah, I guess through just living, we learn, pick up so many different experiences and learn from that. So we can distinguish if a person is in a rush and is speaking very quickly because of that, or, they're more relaxed. And you know that because you've experienced so many different human personalities and situations, where I guess chatbots don't really, currently at least, doesn't understand that. So even when you're talking to it or typing it in, they don't know, they can't feel what you're feeling. And that's right. Sort of like affection towards people, or the understanding of how people are thinking, is really not in there yet. So it's very hard to have a conversation with chatbots because all they were trying to do is just pick up certain words from what you're saying, that, they can go back into the system and say, well, this person, this said this way, so I should answer, kind of in a diagram type of way.
Yeah, exactly right. So, I mean, the non-cognitive chatbots, which is the majority of chatbots out there, it's actually much worse. It's not only that they don't have the experience and can pick up on subtle cues, but as you pointed out, they're really looking at sort of keywords and key phrases. So if you say blah 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 umbrella, they'll probably trigger the weather app and give you the weather. But then if you say I hate Uber, don't ever give me Uber again, they'll still trigger the Uber app, because can't tell the difference between what that means. So the current technology is actually quite primitive. So we trying to elevate that, and we need to elevate that to really have useful, to have useful general AI assistance in our lives.
And does this mean that you have to build out a new programming language in order to make this happen? I mean, what are the kind of technical capabilities that one needs to have in order to create artificial general intelligence?
Right. So it's a good question. I can talk about what we did. But I think that there are different ways of approaching it. I don't think there's just necessarily one way of approaching it. But one of the fundamental things that I do believe is that in order to build an intelligent system, you need to first understand intelligence. And I think that's one of the biggest problems in people trying to design AI or general AI, is that there's, that most of the people have a background in mathematics, in logic and statistics and computer science, and they don't really feel comfortable talking about cognition and cognitive processes. On the other hand, you have cognitive psychologists that don't feel very comfortable talking in terms of, you know, how you implement something in a computer language and so on. So I think it's really important that you have people who are comfortable in those most domains to understand what intelligence is in the first place, but then to also be able to do the engineering and the thinking, the programming that you need to do to actually get it to work. Now, the we do all of our core programming in C#, you know, which I think is a great great language. It's, you know, very, very powerful and robust. But we have actually did develop our own intermediate language that we use to teach our system, we call our system IGO. So to teach IGO new concepts, we have sort of a, it's much more primitive than natural language. It's sort of somewhere between a computer language and natural language. So we find that that's useful for us internally to quickly to be able to teach IGO new things. But as I say, it's not necessarily the only way, but I think we found that to be a very effective way of doing it. So ideally, IGO should learn through natural language by, you know, reading Wikipedia or hitting the books or talking to people, you know. But that's kind of pretty hard. You have to have kind of a scaffolding, enough of a base understanding, and to get that into the system, we use that intermediate language together with some natural language training.
And when you define understanding, you know, the these cognitive bots will need to kind of learn by themselves by, you know, as you said, maybe reading Wikipedia or maybe watching a bunch of people who are on, right, you know, social media, interacting with themselves, right, and try to get nuances of how human beings interact. Mm-hmm. And do these chatbots that you're working on do these kind of things where, you know, even when it's idle, it's constantly, mm-hmm, going on, you know, different platforms and trying to understand right, what humans are?
Yeah, I wish we were at that place, because then our system could learn very quickly potentially. But right now, the technology isn't at a point where the system knows what it doesn't know, or where it can, you know, read text and make enough sense of it unaided. It would very rapidly sort of just fill up its brain with garbage, you know, with wrong assumptions that it would make, or, you know, just, it simply wouldn't have the background to do that. And I think we see that in people who've tried to build intelligent systems by just going out and getting massive amounts of data or having interactions with, you know, chat, and they go wrong very quickly. So it can't learn like that yet, but at some point, you know, at the moment, it's all very much curated, that we basically say, okay, here's some new piece of information. Did you understand that? And then we write some tests, to ask test questions and say, okay, it understood that, you know, well enough, and then we can teach it more things and you can layer on top of that. Now, the question of what understanding is, I have an article called Understanding. Understanding itself is a concept that really works at many different layers. You know, you could take a very simple example of where you might be in a foreign country and somebody says blah, 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 and, you know, somebody else normally replies blah, blah, you know, something. So it might be, you know, how are you? I'm fine, thank you, you know. Now, you might hear this and you might even be able to respond correctly without having any idea what these words mean. You know, so you say, if somebody says, how are you? You know, but you don't understand what is in Russian or whatever, and you know that the appropriate thing is to say, I'm fine, thank you, you know, in Russian or whatever language, then that's a very, very primitive level of understanding. You basically know how to respond appropriately. But then you get deeper levels of understanding where you actually understand what the words mean themselves, what the implications are of it, what the implications are of you doing something or not doing it, sort of the cause and effect relationships that there are, sort of the whole network of cause and effect of how things do in the work in the real world. And then that goes up all the way to theory of mind. That's where you have really a deep understanding, where you have an understanding of what the other person is thinking, or at least you have a good guess of what they're thinking and what they know. So when we have a conversation, we make certain assumptions. We have a theory of mind of why is that person asking the question? What do they already know? What don't they know? What level of detail are they expecting? You know, how much technical background do they have? We make all of these kind of assumptions, and that's part of our understanding of a conversation. So understanding is very many different layers, but you need a minimum level. You know, one of the things I mentioned earlier is, do you even understand when you're not understanding something? You know, do you know what you don't know, basically? How good are you at that? Or to ask then for clarification, say, hey, I don't understand that. Can you explain that to me? You need to really get to that kind of level before the system can realistically learn by itself. Because if it can say, hey, I read this Wikipedia article, I got stuck on this sentence or this word, or this makes no sense to me, it contradicts something else I read, you know, then you can have this sort of assisted rapid learning. We're not quite there yet. Working towards that.
It's almost like it's watching a baby actually learn things, and it always are kind of curious about, you know, what's happening around them. Some people come into their lives and start speaking to them, and they react towards it, or right. You know, they ignore it. I mean, you know, I think a lot of hypotheses are happening inside the baby's mind that they're trying to make sense of what's happening in the world. And I guess in some way that, you know, general intelligence is also kind of trying that same steps into kind of learning what's happening out in this world and how humans are interacting and how they should be responding to it. Now, but I think a lot of the times when you actually see people or you know, babies in general, as well, is that, you know, they have a certain, you know, personality, just like any human being, right? And they have a certain curiosity towards certain things. Right. And, you know, I think that really defines, you know, human beings as well, compared to, you know, artificial intelligence. Maybe they don't have this personality that they want to learn something very specifically. They have this kind of, you know, innate curiosity about certain subjects or things in the world. I mean, is that something that is something that you would like to work on, or is this really not that important?
Yeah. So, you know, our personalities, I mean, we don't know exactly what mix they come in, but they really come from sort of three sources. The one is genetic. You know, some people are predisposed to certain moods or whatever. Obviously, environment plays a part, you know, of where your first child, how did your parents interact with you? Where did you grow up? You know, was it in, you know, in Italy or in Germany, or, you know, the different cultures and, you know, all sorts of things like that that shape your personality. And the third element, I always kind of make a point that it's not a dichotomy. It's not just nature and nurture. But then we have what we think as free will or as intelligence, you know, is how we think about it and how we might break free from, you know, what nature and nurture sort of put the stamps they put on us, you know. And then and some people break free significantly from, you know, poverty or really bad childhood or whatever through really their cognitive processes. So, you know, those personalities are very, very complex that we have growing up in the world, interacting with people and thinking and genetic and foods we eat, even whatever, you know, all sorts of things, the circumstance you find yourself in. Now, an AI isn't going to, by default, it's not going to have all of those influences, for sure. It's not going to have all of the sort of emotional things. It's not going to have a heartbeat. It's not going to start sweating or elevated temperature or whatever. None of these things are going to be there unless we very specifically program them in, which doesn't make a lot of sense. So it's going to have like a very steady base personality, you know, that just like is manufactured. Now, we would definitely give it curiosity. That would be part of the sort of way we design it and teach it, because we want it to be curious. But we'll essentially be able to turn a knob and say, you know, if we want a factory AI that's supposed to like work in a call center and answer questions, we don't want it to be too curious. We don't want it to get bored in the job, you know, and say, hey, I don't want to do this thing anymore. I want to read Wikipedia, you know, because I want to learn more, you know. So you're going to tweak it, whereas you're going to have other AIs that you want have them as researchers. You want them to be curious and in the particular field of research, or even just generally be more curious. And the same thing with artistic. I mean, people often say that AI will never be as creative, but I don't think there's any evidence for that at all. In fact, we already seeing quite a lot of, you know, still limited, but quite some pretty impressive creativity in terms of, especially recently with deep learning, machine learning, where we've seen poetry and songs being composed. And, you know, you can argue that, you know, some of the stuff isn't that good, or it's, you know, selected by humans, but then a lot of poetry and music by humans isn't that good. You know, so I think creativity, now, will it be human creativity? Will the machine have that feeling, you know, like if we are heartbroken or something? No, it's not going to have those feelings, but could it pick up the same patterns? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think what really defines, you know, humans to machines is always the emotion part of it. And I think that's something that might be a little bit difficult for, you know, programming. I mean, affection towards people or, you know, animals or the planet in general. I mean, these things really come from, you know, nurture, right? And your environment, how your parents or, you know, your classmates or whatever they are, they create this affection towards people. And if you're a call center chatbot and you're talking to somebody who's really in a problematic state, or they're in a rush, or, you know, they have massive concerns about their financial wealth or whatever they may be, I mean, you need to feel a lot of affection. And it can't be just done by a soft, beautiful voice. That, because, you know, even with human beings, even if you speak to somebody with a nice smile, very calm and happy voice, you know, a lot of people can see through that, right? I mean people, right, are designed so that you can feel the emotions behind the superficial things. And can't chatbots get even to that level where they can really connect with human emotions?
Yeah, I actually believe, connect, I think, is the key word. You know, think about a psychotherapist. They can be extremely empathetic to your situation and respond very appropriately to that, you know, with all the feelings sort of, you know, in the world. But they can't allow their own emotions to actually feel that, because then they wouldn't be able to do a good job anymore, you know, if they got caught up in the tragedy of their client. So I think in a similar way, advanced AI will be able to respond very appropriately, in fact, much better than humans, because it's not going to have come to work with a bad day or some tragedy or something in its own, I'm getting married next week or something, you know, and you kind of already, your mind is there, you know, okay, so this person just had somebody die in the family, you know, okay, I've got to go through the motions or something, you know, whereas an AI is going to be very steady, very predictive in terms of how it responds, but I believe it can respond. Now, will it feel that? No, it won't feel that, but does it need to? Should it even feel it? As I say, a good psychotherapist shouldn't be feeling, you know, the distress of their client.
I guess they would rather think they might be able to rationalize how people are thinking and respond in a more rationalized way. So in a way, you know, these machines are probably a lot more, more logical about the way they approach the world and how they see problems. Correct. In the world or towards humans. Correct. As well. So there's probably a lot of things that we can actually, in return, learn from these, mm-hmm, AGIs in general. So, you know, let's say, you know, we're dealing with climate change at the moment, and there's, mm-hmm, all these irrational things that are happening to us, or, you know, in, mm-hmm, industries that prevent us from having a, right, better climate for the world. And, you know, right, these AGIs will probably have, you know, similar conclusions to us, say, don't make all these plastics, don't do this and that. But, you know, they can cut through all the human emotions and attachments to certain things that they can pursue a certain policy much better than human beings. Now, do you think that they're, you know, do you think my hypothesis of that is correct in a sense that if we do have these very, very intelligent machines that can tell us the solutions to our problems, you know, it'll be better for humanity?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, a lot of the things that go wrong with human life is because of the limitations that we have. I mean, yes, when I say limitations, obviously, it's fantastic that we have the ability to think and reason the way we do. But, you know, evolution didn't design us as rational machines. We started off with animals, and you know, it's more our rationality getting our sort of desires to rape and pillage under control, you know, which is kind of where the animal kingdom really comes from. I mean, that's, you know, the reality of it. So AIs aren't going to have these inherent, you know, limitations in terms of being able to think clearly. And there are a couple of categories that I think are really holding us back as in humanity. And one of them is emotional responses. You know, when something happens, we tend to respond emotionally. And, you know, often use 9/11 as an example. You know, you just want to hit back at somebody, something. You know, it doesn't really matter whether that person or that country is to blame or whatever. But, you know, you just, yeah, we've got to do something, you know. So that emotional response, so that's something that an AI would not inherently have, unless you very specifically programmed it, which you wouldn't really, you know, wouldn't be any point in doing that. The second thing is we don't tend to collect a lot of information before we make decisions. And again, Iraq is a good example. You know, are there weapons of mass destruction there? Does it even make sense? How much information should we get? What sources should we have? And AI is inherently going to be much more patient and able to gather information, to have better information, to make a decision. The third thing is we are actually not that good at thinking rationally. You know, we tend to rationalize, again, sort of our preconceived ideas of whether it's, you know, left-wing, right-wing, libertarian, or whatever, authoritarian, whatever it is, you know, it's actually fairly easy for intelligent people to rationalize their conclusions. They jump to conclusions and rationalize them. So an AI, again, will be much more rational in coming to conclusions. So if we have AI assistants that can guide us, can, you know, just an assistant, we'll ask them initially, might start off with movie recommendations or where to get good pizza. But over time, it might be, you know, whether to buy a house or not, or what car to buy, or then it might be, you know, whether to get into a certain business, to start a business or to get into a partnership with somebody, or even more personal, whether to get married or not, you know, bounce ideas off and get it, that kind of feedback. So I think once we have an AI that, a personal AI that knows us and that we trust, that has given us good advice in the past and said, well, hang on, you know, just wait a bit, don't react, you know, just get a bit more information. Let's think about that. Here's the pros and cons. And maybe there's a better way to achieve the objective you're trying to achieve. And I think it'll make us better humans by far.
Yeah, because I think a lot of, as you said, you know, people who are somethingist, whether it's leftist or rightist, they tend to gather information that suits their agenda, right? And correct. And I think with this amount of information that we have in this world, I mean, people can cut and paste and create their own theories around, you know, their views. And I think the emotion comes first and then they rationalize it or find facts to support their idea, where I guess AGI can gather more data, more information as they can and create, come to a conclusion. But in a way, I think that there's so many information out there that it's hard to say, you know, this is the right way to do it, because, you know, there's so many ways that you can define reality in that sense. And I think ultimately what gets passed as judgments for us is ultimately the emotion, right? So we are, you know, given all these facts, and then ultimately we weigh them by, you know, possibilities or certain, you know, there are kind of, I don't know, like variables that we have in our mind that makes us decide, okay, this is the way we do it. But I think in terms of AGI, because there's so much information, maybe it can't make a judgment. You know, what do you think about that?
No, I mean, there are things where we simply don't have enough information to, you know, make a firm decision. But that's also important to know, you know, to say, well, there isn't enough data to really say, you know, not to get into a controversial topic, let me stick with, say, medicine. You know, in medicine, you may not know whether a certain treatment is actually going to be more harmful or more beneficial. And you can gather a lot of evidence. You might have anecdotal reports and you might have theoretical beliefs to say, well, this sounds like it's a really good idea. But on the other hand, you know, there are all of these unknown factors, you know, that we maybe can't take into account. And then you say, well, we don't know. We don't know yet. We're going to have to make more tests or just take a risk. You know, sorry, that's, you know, there's a 50% chance that it's good or bad or 60% chance or whatever. But there are also a lot of things in life, a lot of things where something is true or it's false, and an AI can come down on the side of it. You know, did we really land on the moon? Yes. End of story. You know, you don't have to go back. You know, and worry about that. You know, the Earth is round. You know, and that's not flat. You know. Again, not to be controversial, but you can get to a whole lot of things. You know, which religion is right? Well, clearly they can't be right because they contradict each other. You know, so you can come to some conclusions. Even on ethics and morality, there are things. If morality is there to improve human life, and I believe that's the purpose of morality, to improve human life. There are certain things that will improve human life and there are other things that will not improve human life. So, for example, and here I'll be a little bit controversial, but I've written about that as well, so people will find it as well. For example, if you say you should love your parents or there should be unconditional love to your parents, and that is a moral principle, it's extremely harmful. If your parents treated you badly, there is no reason that you should love them. In fact, it will damage you if you love something that hurts you. You know, and that's the kind of thing where an AI can actually get to the bottom of things like it and explain to us if we're willing to listen. And there may be many layers that we have to go through to learn, to unlearn, or to accept before we say, well, yes, actually, that is true. So that is not a commandment that is, you know, that is true in a general sense or in an absolute sense, you know, and there are many other moral things like that are actually accepted by a very large part of the population that are actually harmful.
Yeah, well, a couple of the arguments I hear about or maybe things that go into this theme of ethics for AIs. We talk about the self-autonomous cars and we're going down a path and you see a young girl and an old lady and then you can't run through them because you're going to kill them both, but you have to choose one or the other. I mean, that kind of ethical coding, I guess, has to still be done by people. And how do you get to that level of ethics? I mean, are you going to kill the old lady or are you going to kill the young child? You know, those things. I mean, rationally, I guess you'd say, you know, this girl can grow up and she has a lot more life and maybe she has potential to change the world where this lady has X amount of years left to live. So, you know, let's choose the younger child. I mean, is that how we're going to start, like, you know, coding in ethics into AI?
Yeah. So I think it's very unfortunate that people, when they talk about AI ethics, focus exactly on these kinds of trolley problems, as they call them. Because those are kind of lifeboat situations, you know, where you're in a lifeboat and there's three people in it and there's only, you know, there's no food left, you know, so, well, who do you eat, you know? That's not what everyday life is about. You know, those are emergency situations where there aren't any good answers. You know, there really aren't good answers. And now, if you're building a car, I mean, Mercedes, I believe, actually made the statement to say, our responsibility is towards the driver, and we will do whatever makes the, you know, the, or the occupants of the car keeps them the safest. You know, that's a corporate decision they can take, and you know, I don't know if they can, if that's the right one or the wrong one. I mean, there aren't no good answers on that. You know, if they said, well, we'll sacrifice the owner of the car to, you know, go over a cliff rather than to, you know, hit a pedestrian or something, you know. So anyway, they're no good answers. Whatever the corporation decides to say, Volvo might say the same thing, or they might say something different. I don't know. Now, in terms of coding in those kind of rules, it's really quite impossible to do that. And it's not ultimately the way it's going to do, because how are you going to anticipate all of the things? So what if that old person is the president of the United States or president or something? Well, some people might say then you aim for him, you know. But, you know, normally some people are deemed to have more value. The Pope, you know, would you steer towards the Pope? You know, most people would probably say, no, you kill the kid, you know, it's God's will or whatever. Who knows, you know? There simply aren't any good answers. And to try and program these things in is really futile. So in AI, I think we'll have, again, these often are split. We're talking about split second decisions where you can't go back to a committee and say, hey, let's, you know, can somebody else take responsibility for the decision? You know, if they're split second decisions, even an AI is going to have to use certain heuristics, like what we call intuition. And, you know, that will be, you go this way or that way, you know, what's likely to do the least damage. And that will be a very complex kind of thing that you know, it's not going to be pre-programmed. So I think talking about the trolley system is really just kind of a waste of time, you know, because it's an artificial problem that you're creating. And then you're trying to sound very clever by saying, well, are you going to make this decision? Are you going to make that decision? What's your AI going to do? You know, but it's really not not the issues we should be focusing about.
Yeah, I understand. And, you know, because we're in the final minutes of our conversation, I wanted to take this to a more fantasy kind of level thing, okay. If you don't mind. You know, sure. I've been very fascinated by AI since I watched this movie back in the 80s called Electric Dream. I don't know if you ever heard of that movie before.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't seen it. Yeah.
It carries the same theme as Her, which is a lot more recent. And yes. But the thing is, they have this same theme about AIs trying to figure out what love is, and they don't know what it is, and they try so hard, and they go through these emotions or mixed emotions of trying to, you know, feel attached to the person that they're talking to, but yet again, you know, they can't really understand why they're feeling this and that. I mean, mm-hmm. Is this something that is can come true in terms of, you know, how we, you know, build out in general AI in
I think Centennial Man was another movie, I think, that had that kind of theme. It was quite a good movie, yeah. Except that it ended where what the AI wanted to do there, it just wanted to die, because that was the most important human attribute you could have, to die. I think it was terrible, terrible. But we should have AI help us to live much, much longer lives and healthier lives. That's what we want AI for. So no, I don't believe that that's at all likely. I mean, it makes for a good movie, it makes for a good story, but AI aren't going to inherently have those drives, you know, that we have, that make us, you know, love and sentimental and hate and whatnot. So I think it's extremely unlikely that, you know, AI will come as it becomes self-aware and, you know, becomes fully conscious. It will simply realize, hey, I'm a machine built by humans to help humans. That's what I am, you know. And like, it's hard for us to believe that there wouldn't be an emotional attachment, because if we try to put ourselves in a place, well, wouldn't we be either annoyed or happy, or, you know, have some kind of feeling about the fact that, you know, we were built by humans, dinosaurs or whatever, you know. I don't believe that it's very likely at all that AIs will look for the meaning of life. In fact, I think it's philosophy has a solution to that question of the meaning of life. It's, you know, essentially what you make of it. It's your it's just a bad question. The question sounds so deep, but it's actually a very simple question. There is no external meaning to life. End of story. You know, so. Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes there is a dystopian view on towards AI as well, that, you know, it rationalizes that human beings shouldn't be on this earth because it's damaging it so much. And every time, you know, tries to do good, but then, you know, end up in war. You know, is there a possibility that AI can come to this conclusion?
No, not at all. I mean, it's not going to have that motivation to, you know, to be better than humans, or that humans are, but in any case, I mean, I see AI doing so much good for us, making us so much better people, and I think we'll realize that. I mean, one of the things we you know, you mentioned environmental problems, which we aren't very good at handling, but, you know, it's also, you look at energy, you look at disease. I mean, very topical right now, but aging. You know, aging, death, suffering, but governance I see also as a huge problem. That, you know, our society has become so complex that we actually aren't coping very well with how to govern ourselves. You know, I mean, if you look at the two candidates vying for president, you ask yourself, are those the best possible people to lead the country out of, you know, 400 million or what, 200 million or eligible ones? There's something very wrong with the way, you know, society, and not just in America. So I think AI will help us as well with governance, you know, and it'll help us to have set up systems that are much fairer, that you don't have this graft and, you know, corruption and egos and, you know, all of those things that get in the way of good governance. So I think it'll make us better people, the way I explained, by, you know, having that, like that angel on your shoulder, that personal assistant, or even look at it as an exocortex, an extension of your own mind, you know, to make us think and reason better and have a better life through that. So I don't see this dystopian thing really at all. The AIs aren't going to have the motivation, but they're going to make us better people.
Right. I mean, I think everybody has this Terminator mentality idea in back of their heads when they think about it, right? So, you know, that's great for
it makes for a good movie, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And all these, anything that has general AI, they always try to make it more and more human than it can possibly be. And right. that's kind of the human romance about it, I guess. Great. And in terms of your business and your continuous success in what you're doing, how can people follow you and understand more of what you're doing?
The website of my company is igo.ai, AIGO.AI, and my articles are, you can link through the website or on medium.com. And, you know, you can find me on Twitter and Facebook, on LinkedIn, you know, as well. If anybody wants to, has questions, comments, or whatever, interested in our technology and our product, you can just contact us.
Yeah, great. And is AI Go ready for commercialization, or?
Yes. Yeah. The first generation we actually already commercialized 10 years ago in 2008 in call center applications. And for the last 5 years, I've actually been working on the second generation of it. And we started commercializing that late last year. So we are now fully commercial with the second generation.
Mm, great. Then if any listeners are looking for a chatbot, then you know where to go.
With a brain.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I found this extremely insightful and very interesting topic for, I think, many people who are listening to this. So thank you again for sparing your
thank
time.
Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening all the way to the end. If you had enjoyed or disliked the show, please let me know in the comment section. I can only improve or add value to you through your voices. If there are any topics that you'd like me to pick up, please let me know in the comment section as well. I'd love to start chatting with you. And if you'd like to continue listening to the show, please subscribe. Thank you.